Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Du Hirsu,
with a musical introduction by Brendan Lowe, our director of music. Thanks for listening.
Now, among those who went up to worship at the festival were some Greeks. They came to Philip, who was from Bethsaida in Galilee, and said to him, "Sir, we wish to see Jesus." Philip went and told Andrew, and then Andrew and Philip went and told Jesus. And Jesus answered them, "The hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. Very truly I tell you, unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains just a single grain. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. Those who love their life lose it. Those who hate their life in this world will keep it for eternal life. Whoever serves me must follow me, and where I am, there will be my servant be also. Whoever serves me, the Father will honor. Now my soul is troubled. What should I say? Father, save me from this hour? No, it is for this reason that I have come to this hour. Father, glorify your name." Then a voice came from heaven, "I have glorified it, and I will glorify it again." The crowd standing there heard it and said that it was thunder. Others said, "An angel has spoken to him." Jesus answered, "This voice has come for your sake, not for mine. Now is the judgment of this world. Now the ruler of this world will be driven out. And I, when I am lifted up from the earth, will draw all people to myself." He said this to indicate the kind of death he was to die. And the crowd answered him, "We have heard from the law that the Messiah remains forever. How can you say that the Son of Man must be lifted up? Who is this Son of Man?" Jesus said to them, "The light is with you for a little longer. Walk while you have the light, so that the darkness may not overtake you. If you walk in the darkness, you do not know where you are going. While you have the light, believe in the light, so that you may become children of the light." After Jesus had said this, he departed and hid from them.
Last Sunday was a bit of a blur for me. So we had two worship services in which we tried to unpack some of the contrasting ways that followers of Jesus have understood the significance of Jesus's death. And we did this by looking at some things that kind of unraveled some of the foundations for our theological worldviews for some of the folks in here. And then we had people afterwards asking a lot of questions. And then we had a student from seminary in Berkeley who was here visiting because she wanted to hear more about the story of this little church and to understand what was happening here. And so we went to lunch. And then finally, I looked at my phone, and it was just after 2:30. And I was supposed to be at a draft for fantasy baseball. A live draft at 2:30. And some of you guys know what that is, and others of you have no idea what I'm talking about. But I grabbed this list of the 300 best baseball players, according to ESPN, and I took it with me, and I had my laptop, and I showed up, and I got into the room. I was a couple minutes late, but thankfully so were most everyone else around me. I've never done a live fantasy baseball draft before. And I wouldn't do it the same again if I did. My list just had the name of the player, the team they played for, and the position that they played. And I looked around, and the guy sitting next to me had like a book. He had a book about everybody that's in single A, double A. I think if your child is playing T-ball, this guy knows about your kid. He is like ready to draft him because in 2054, he might be a first round pick. All around me were guys who approach baseball with this angle. So here's my approach. I love the Kansas City Royals. That's pretty much all I got. I had that, and I had a list of 300 names, okay? So by round 8 or 9, I had two choices. I could either draft a royal, because at least I knew that guy was still on the team and he was going to play, or I could take a shot and throw out a name really that I'd never seen before, and then they could let me know, actually, he just had Tommy John surgery. He's not playing in for at least two more years. So I was in a tough spot. I wasn't sure what to do. And my fantasy team is going to suffer because I was not really prepared. I had a hope and no plan. And I got in that space, and it was nerve-wracking. I do want to say, there was one guy who seemed to know less than I did. And that felt so good to just like when it was his turn. I was like, it's me and you, dude. We're in this together. And some of you guys don't know what fantasy baseball is, and you think, who cares? And other folks, you feel my pain. You know your team, maybe your bracket fell apart too this weekend. Tina's bracket. Well, you were actually doing great, so who knows? My bracket, similar preparedness, similar end to that story as well. It's not going so hot. So for something like this, we can think it's no big deal. But too many times what's happened in my own journey in these last few years in ministry is I've seen people and families who haven't done preparation as they move towards something as important and significant as death. And it looks a lot like my draft. People are scrambling around. They're looking for pages. They don't know what's there. They haven't written something down. And so they end up needing the people around them to support them. Right? Like I could put a name out there of a player who just had Tommy John surgery, and then everybody around me would have to decide, are they going to help me out or are they going to let my team suffer? These guys totally let my team suffer, believe me. And in life, that's exactly what happens. When we don't do that planning and preparation, the people around us are going to have to do it on our behalf. And so this morning, we're going to look together at a topic that a lot of us don't really want to look at. I know I haven't wanted to. This was the week as we were moving toward this series that I really thought Sarah and I might need to go away for a week so that we can just avoid this. But we're going to be here together talking about what it means to move towards the end of life. And we're going to do that by looking back at how Jesus embraced and looked at his own pending death. And what that meant in the early church and what it might mean for us today. See, we prepare for end-of-life issues because if we don't spend the time on it, the other people around us will have to. Without advanced medical directives, the folks around us are going to have to make decisions on our behalf without really having a sense of what we might desire. If we haven't planned for our estate, then the people around us are going to have to discern our preferences on our behalf. Without saving for the costs of death, and this is something that I think I was completely unaware of until I moved into ministry, without saving for those costs of death, we're actually forcing those around us to pay for those things as well. Without sharing our story with the people that we love, we're taking a chance that we're never going to really share aloud those things that are most important with us to the people who are most important to us. Jesus says it this way in John 12. Unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains just a single grain. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. Pastor Steve Holmes says, this is faith in resurrection. It's not some speculation on the future, but it's the trust to die in love. And that's what we're going to hold this morning. Jesus's trust and his openness to dying in love. We're continuing this worship series, Hope in Dying. We'll look today at Jesus's story here in John's gospel, and then next week we'll turn to the psalmist and look at how suffering has played out in our own lives and lives around us and how we might find hope in the midst of that as we move through death into resurrection. In our story, though, from John 12, it starts with Greeks coming to find Jesus. And actually, it's really explicit. It says that the Greeks came to see Jesus. The Greeks didn't come to, like, get a formula for belief in Jesus. The Greeks didn't come to, like, have a class with Jesus. The Greeks came to just see Jesus. And as often happens in John's gospel, we don't really know what happened to the Greeks. They show up. They want to see Jesus. There's some scurrying around among Philip and the others. And then Jesus uses this as a teaching moment for the disciples. And it makes me wonder if those Greeks were actually listening in or watching on, or where they were in all of this. And if ever there was a moment where we were last week thinking about the significance of Jesus' death, if ever there was a moment in the gospel for the writer to say, okay, we have all of these texts. We are going to boil this down to a simple formula so that everyone can get it right. Okay, we looked at that last week with John 3:16 and tried to problematize that and make sense of what it looks like in our lives. If ever there's a moment for it, this is it. See, the Greeks are outsiders. They're others. They're folks who are coming in to try to figure out the way. And so this is a moment where if you were ever going to have one in the gospel that says, Jesus died on behalf of your sins, this is the moment to say it. But that's not what happens. Instead, we get this kind of weird agrarian image. Unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains just a single grain. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. See, Jesus doesn't go where a lot of us would expect. That's almost always the case. And here in John, instead, he starts to try to make meaning of his own approaching death and resurrection and what the implications of that are for the people around him. He uses this image that a grain is going to die to bear much fruit. See, in the giving of life, Jesus sees that the grain makes possible abundant life. There's one biblical scholar who says that this image of much fruit in John's gospel, what this actually means is it's a metaphor for the life of the community of faith. So what is happening when the grain dies is the life of the community of faith is being renewed. It's being opened up. It's created. It's possible. So when the Greeks, they come and they want to see Jesus, well, if they're going to see Jesus, this is how they'll have to see it. Through a grain dying and a community rising out of that. Another scholar named Dirk Lang writes about it like this. God is not glorified by imposing a death sentence on Jesus. God is glorified by Jesus himself, who is not looking to get something for himself. See, Jesus could have said back to the Greeks, like, let me show you how to get yours in this world. This is all you got to do. This is pretty easy. There's a lot of suckers around here. Jesus doesn't go that direction. He tells this story, a story that would have made sense to them because they knew what seeds were and they knew what it meant to bear much fruit. And he shares this with them. Jesus doesn't walk this path out of a sense of like patriotism for the empire. Or I don't even think he walks it out of a theology. He walks it in communion with God, in oneness with God. And this path that he takes, some people talk about it as following God's will. It's not forged through a morbid, death-glorifying practice. This path, this identity into the fullness of giving, it's forged by giving one's life that all might be drawn in love. That's what Jesus is trying to do, is to draw all people in love together. That's what it looks like to be drawn into relationship with Jesus. That's what it looks like for a grain to die that there might bear much fruit. In John 12, it states it like this. Now is the judgment of this world. Now the ruler of this world will be driven out. And when I am lifted up from the earth, will draw all people to myself. He said this to indicate the kind of death that he was to die. See, Jesus is both confronting and announcing that the rulers of the world are in trouble. They're in trouble because this grain is going to die and a community is going to rise. And as this happens, hope emerges amidst dying. See, the cross of Good Friday is never the last page. The resurrection of Sunday comes. Hope emerges. That's the final movement in God's action of love. That's Jesus drawing all people to God. And for Jesus, all means all. It doesn't say like, I'm going to draw all the people who said this into union with God. It doesn't say, I'm going to draw all the people who went on alternative spring break and served the poor for a week. I'm going to draw them in union with God. It doesn't say, I'm going to draw all the people that went to church on Sunday and have them be in union with God. It just says, I'm going to draw all. And they're all is like, in the Greek, it's not even like all people. Over and over, you look at it in some texts, it's like all men. Or then people understand gender and they're like all people. But it's really like all of the cosmos. Jesus is saying, I am going to ascend to be with God so that all of creation, all of the cosmos will also be with God. When Jesus looks at his death, that's the kind of love that he embodies, that he sees. He wants to show that all of this is for God's love. So unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains just a single grain. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. And then I think Jesus is very human. After sharing this with everyone, right? After sitting down your family members, your loved ones, to tell them about how you're going to draw them together in love through the end of your life. Well, if you're like me, you'd want to go and hide because that would be emotionally draining to even think about that possibility. And it turns out that Jesus models just that. After Jesus had said this, he departed and he hid from them. I love these moments of humanity that show up. Like, I just talked to you about the end of life. I need some space, people. I've got to have a moment. You can process this, work this through, but I need some time here. I know it's been tempting for me to hide from death, and I don't think I've really been conscious of this. I think instead, what I've mostly just assumed is that I was pretty healthy yesterday. I was pretty healthy a few years ago. So I'll be healthy tomorrow. I've had this entitlement of like, well, I'll wake up tomorrow and things will be good. And I know that there are people in this room whose very lives should awaken me to the falseness of that assumption. But I kind of continue to just go on. Like, things are going pretty well. And so there is a part of me, personally, that needs to die to that kind of entitlement that tomorrow will be tomorrow, and I'll be just as healthy then as I am now. Pastor Linda and her husband Mark were given a phenomenal gift when they were married. They didn't realize that it was a phenomenal gift. They kind of thought it was weird. There was an attorney in the church where she was who offered to meet with them to prepare their wills and to have conversations and draw up all the paperwork around future children that they might have and where they would go. And that sounded much less exciting than the like wine glasses or than the trip to Hawaii. Those kind of, actually, you didn't get a trip to Hawaii, but that would have been a good gift too. Oh, you did? Oh, dang. Wow. But it took focus. It took 10 years for them to actually come back and to really receive that gift. That's how long it took before Harrison was born. And then they gathered with that attorney, and the documents that they wrote up at that moment have been a living document. They've had to revisit it over time. But it helped them to think toward the future, to watch over their own children in love and the people around them. And Sarah and I haven't really taken any of those steps until really recently. About a year ago, one of the people in her kitchen table gave her, who works at UC Davis, gave her a sheet about advanced medical directives. And we looked at it for, I don't know, a couple of moments. And we put it down, and maybe you have a counter where you put things that are really important, and they kind of stack up. So it was in that stack of really important things. And last week, when my mom was in town, we finally looked at it together. And it turns out that it's tons of pages, and it brings up lots of conversations about what kinds of procedures might you wish for or not wish for? What's it going to look like toward the end of life and all these decisions? And this isn't something that we can control. It's not something that we can say, we're going to do these things and it's all going to work out fine. But I do think that it's something that we can shape. And so we started to have conversations together and with my mom about what this would look like. Out of that, we also heard some stories. Those stories in your own families, maybe if it's like mine, that get repressed, that nobody wants to talk about. Everybody knows it's true, but nobody wants to say it out loud. So the story of a family member who passed away and didn't have things in order. And then the loved ones had to spend more money than was actually coming in on the estate to actually work out the details of it. And then the fighting that happens between siblings over what's going to go where and who gets what and how. I've seen it way too many times, both with people who were coming to the end of their natural life and it seemed clear to everyone around them that they didn't have long to live, but they weren't able to face that, and so the things were not in order. And then I've seen it with people closer to my own age who it just seems like, well, it's way too far off. We're not there. We don't have to do that. But death strikes, and then things aren't in order, and where do we go? How do we turn? So I want to commend to you the people around you that love you, that you might have some conversations in this coming week about how is it that you might die? What shape do you imagine that taking, and what things do you need to put in order? We have some folks from our community who are professionals who are going to be here next Sunday to help people at 9:30, and I hope you'll attend and join them in that class. I believe that planning and preparation around these really hard to talk about issues is critical. I know that these documents can help us. They can guide us as we move towards the end of life. I also know that we have people in this community who are in very different places. So we have college students, recent graduates. And for many of us, this seems so far off. We're watching our parents watch over their parents in love. But us taking on that responsibility seems really distant. And for others of us, we right now aren't here. We're listening on the podcast because we're watching over our siblings who are in the very end of their life already. So I recognize that we come at this from all of these different places. Some of us are expecting children and some of us have children. All of us, though, I believe, have a responsibility to watch over the people around us in love by trying to work through these issues with them. And again, we won't control how these things happen, but we can shape the ways in which we love others as we do this, as we plan ahead and as we're preparing. See, Jesus draws all into the love of God. And the ways in which we plan for our death have a capacity to either do harm to those around us or to draw others deeper in love as well. And so my hope is that in this coming week, we'll spend some time thinking about those critical choices and decisions, to having conversations that will continue for the rest of our lives, because I believe that it's in learning to die that we also learn to live, to appreciate the beauty that I name, that I run right past every morning when I wake up, assuming that that day should just be given to me. Unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains just a single grain. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. So may we, as God's people, plan for the inevitability of our dying in ways that also bear much fruit. May we accompany those we love in their own preparations. And in all of this, may the love of Jesus that goes before us draw us into the grace of God.